Yes.
So I was fascinated to hear, Rabbi, we did not have read the book yet, that the prophet's wife is not the protagonist.
No.
That's what it's called.
Right.
Yes.
And I was also fascinated when you started to tell about the rabbi's life, that he was a pulpit rabbi and wrote brilliant sermons and was a novelist and traveled. I whispered to Batshir, wow, you know, talk about an angel in the house. His wife must have been a saint. And then to hear you say, well, she also had a vivid internal life of her own.
I've read that she really did not enjoy the life of a rabbitson at all.
I'm betting Rabbi Steinberg did not do his own laundry if he managed to do all that other stuff. I'm guessing he didn't pick up his own dry cleaning and dust.
Well, most rabbis in that generation had a wife who was, everything.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
And
she was his editor.
And she was his editor, so she would...
And typist.
And he's the one whose name was on the manuscript. So there is that going on. So on one hand, there's this issue of clearly this guy was anguished, and he was aware of this person as a personality and someone with whom he was trying to work out a relationship, and it comes out in the novel. And I remember reading the book of Hosea and thinking, well, what is this guy complaining about? He knew precisely what he was getting when he married Gomer. What did he think her profession was, And on the third hand, when we look at how that story is played out in the Jewish imagination, when Jewish men historically, now Jewish women, are wrapping tefillin, and we say aristically, the wife is us. It's all of us. It's historically been a Jewish man. So on one hand, the wife has been a kind of auxiliary Jew who enables the religious practice of male rabbis. And yet on the other hand, the wife is the people Israel. And I'm interested to know how it be placed with that in contradiction at all.
Well, beneath the surface, there's constantly this sense of the adulterous wife in the book and the idolatrous people. And, this idea that how can this figure, Hosea, forgive his wife's betrayal really parallels this much bigger question, right, of how can God keep taking us back? And how can God keep taking us back? How does this relationship between Israel and God work? And why does God keep taking us back when over and over and over again we betray? We have betrayed. So one question is that you have to ask is God the sucker? Hosea is the sucker. But of course, all the prophets are asking that kind of question. God is the sucker. God, the God of the universe, is always ending up pleading with us. Come back to me. Why when I called but nobody answered? Why didn't you? Why did you do that? Don't you know me? Don't you remember me? I'm the one you married. I'm the one who took you from Egypt. I'm the one who makes all these great things. So there's always that dynamic. And I think that he really, he's working it out. But like I said, in the book, there is no God to ask. God is, in a sense, you could say, is God. God's completely castrated because God doesn't even enter the novel. So God is an idea. Faith in God is an idea. But the God of, the God who split the the sea, the God who took us out of Egypt, that God doesn't call out to Hosea and tell him to go marry a prostitute. Hosea goes and does it on his own, of his own free will. It's no longer a charge. There's no charge.
Which I think is in the spirit of, you know, kind of, I don't know if Steinberg would consider himself a modernist as a novelist, but, you know, using the biblical theme but recasting it as a product of his time. So where was the God in the 1940s? That, you know, there was no God with any directive. So this is Hosea in 1940. I didn't read this as, you know, taking me back to the biblical period. Back to the biblical period, I'll read the Bible. This is Hosea couched in biblical scenery, but operating in the 20th century, most definitely. The 20th century issues of theology, of personal issues as well, most definitely.
And just to add to what you both are saying, in the novel, it seems that Hosea falls in love with this woman, not in spite of her deficiencies or her lack of a capacity to be true, but because of these deficiencies.
Absolutely. That's flipping, you know, that's, I think, what he does there in his very bold way. And again, it's very much like, I compare back to Agnon. If you look at the original, like, you know, when Agnon is quoting, it seems to be quoting from a biblical text or a Talmudic text, and you look at the original, if you're knowledgeable to say, oh, I recognize that verse from Masechet Baba Metzia and the Gemara, and I go back and you look at it and say, well, wait a minute, not only is this, he's not just using the language because it sounded nice, it's a nice poetic use. He's taking the concept from the Talmud and reversing it, flipping it over. Okay? So it's almost, this is not a sacred text. It's an anti-text. Okay? This is against the book of Hosea. This is not a commentary to, it's an anti-Hosea, saying, I'm reading Hosea very differently, in a different theological mode, in a completely different universe than whoever wrote Hosea, whoever he was, I don't care who he was. He's not here now, this is something else.
I don't know that I would say that he fell in love with her despite her deficiencies, because he doesn't know from the get-go that she's going to betray him. He has no idea. All he does know is that she's already told him she doesn't love her. So he knows that he's madly in love with a woman who doesn't love him. But he doesn't know that she's going to betray him yet. So he's desperately in love with her. And you know what? As a rabbi, how many times, just the woman yesterday, you know, is telling me her tzuris, and, you know, she's madly in love with a guy, and he's always fighting with her, and he's always mean, but she's still madly in love with him. And it's like, how often does that happen where you tell yourself stories that make something right when maybe, you know, somebody else looking at the situation would say there's something wrong here. But I don't think in his mind he saw, oh, she's going to cheat on me. All he knew was that he loved her.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, in that moment when she says, I'm basically never going to be able to love you, you know, what in the absence of love can one expect other than some kind of betrayal, even if it's not one of the physical
kind? When you think of arranged, like you're thinking about that time, well, who loved who? Who loved anybody?
That's
you
true.
Know, fathers made contracts.
Right.
It wasn't love. Where how did love figure into it?